Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and of course, this is a special edition of our radio program. And so bear with me for one moment, family, because I have to make sure that one of our guests is able to call in. So let me do this very quickly. In the meantime, what we're going to do is remind you that we are getting ready for the MWM 25 reunion is coming, family. That's right. The kickoff, that is. I'm going to tell you more about that in a few minutes, but for right now, check this out.
The most respected person in America is the black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the black woman. The most neglected person in America is the black woman. And as Muslims, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us to respect our women and to protect our women. And the only time a Muslim really gets real violent is when someone goes to molest his woman. He will kill you for our woman. I'm making it plain, yes. He will kill you for our woman. We believe that if the white man will do whatever is necessary to see that his woman gets respect and protection, then you and I will never be recognized as men until we stand up like men and place the same penalty over the head of anyone who puts his filthy hands out to put in the direction of our women.
All right. Yes, indeed. So, that said, that, of course, was none other than Malcolm X, Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz. And we find it so very interesting that at this stage of the game, here he said that 60 years ago, roughly, and here we are today, having these same kinds of issues, problems, and by the way, it has escalated. It has literally escalated. All over the country now, there are, of course, the increase of sex trafficking, the increase of rape, molestation, the increase of beatings, and, of course, murder of our women and girls. Well, MWM has been working diligently over these past, actually, two decades to really examine not only what the problem is in terms of what goes on a day-to-day basis, but really examining the causes and not just the very obvious or the very typical causes, such as, sometimes the family situation is a certain way, or sometimes, you know, they say that the violence tends to and abuse tends to, happen when they, generationally speaking. Well, what about being brought here? How about that? How about the heinous types of violations that occurred with our people, leading up to now? And so we have to look at the bigger picture, the fuller picture, because if we don't, then this madness will not only continue again, it will do what we're seeing it is doing, which is to escalate. And so tonight, family, we're going to introduce to you at least to some very small degree, the National Campaign for the Elimination of Violence and Abuse of Women and Girls of African Descent. Now, that's a long kind of name, but you will also hear us say the Just Us, hashtag Just Us, in terms of black women and girls. Or you'll hear us say EIE, No Mo, which is enough is enough, no more. So these are some of the things you're going to hear and see us do when we bring forward the MWM 25 reunion, which will be a year-long commemoration. Not one day, not 2 days. No, we deserve more, and we're going to do more. Now it's a movement. So tonight we're going to talk about a couple of things. Of course, with MWM as a universal movement, we're also introducing the Million Woman Party. That's a part of our movement structure to make sure that our women are able now to advance in the political arenas and in politics, period. And so that's not just electoral. But in this case for tonight, that's what we're going to talk about, because we have two sisters who is going to be talking with us tonight about running for office. We're going to talk very shortly with Sister Cynthia Johnson, who is running for a congressional seat in the New Jersey area, covering the counties of Essence and also several other surrounding counties, Union, Hudson. And we're going to also talk Carnita Atwater, who just recently, she was the first Black woman to run for governor in the state of Tennessee. And so now she's getting ready to run for president. Now, you all know, I mean, that's not something new, but it ain't something that's happened in the 21st century, I don't believe. Oh, yes, it is. Cynthia McKinney, I think, was in the 21st century. But nevertheless, we definitely remember Shirley Chisholm. Oh, yeah. But, you know, there was a few other Black women that ran for president. But listen, certainly it's time. But note, we don't want to just talk about being in office and running and all of that. There's got to be some changes. There's got to be a difference. And so what you're going to hear us talk more about family now is we don't care about either one of those parties. To be honest with you, we really don't. What we care about is winning and having some integrity and having some principle. Now, we know that for real, being in the political arena, that's kind of hard to do. What we're going to work on doing is staying focused on issues and solutions. And again, not playing this game the way that most do. And so you're going to hear us talk more about some different approaches, some different methodologies. Even though we're going to work within the parameters of a certain structure, best believe it can be done. How do we know? How about Mayor Chokwe Lumumba? Yes. Mayor Chokwe Lumumba made it very clear that, you know, you can run and win and still be a Black man or a Black woman in this case. So we're going to look at those examples, and we're going to now move forward accordingly. So listen, what we're going to do now is bring on the candidate running for the congressional seat in New Jersey, and that is Cynthia Johnson. And she's going to share with you something about her platform. But first, we're going to talk with her about a little bit about who she is, why she is, why she's running for office. And again, what is going to make her candidacy, and even more important, what is going to make what she's talking about doing, what's going to make that different from these other people that are presently in? We call them now Negropeans. And so what's going to keep her from being a Negropean or from falling into the same okey-doke stuff that it seems that most do? And again, we know that it can be done because we do have a few examples of brothers and sisters who have run for office, won, and stayed Black. How about that? So it's not like it can't be done. You just got to know how to do it and be ready to fight, by the way, because you know they're not going to let you do that very easily. So let's open up the line for Cynthia Johnson. And before we go into her campaign, let's hear a little bit of history, a little bit of information about her. Hey, Cynthia, how are you this evening?
I'm well. How are you, Empress?
Wonderful. Always. Oh, listen, as long as we can, as I always say, sister, as long as we can do this work and make some headway, and we are, I'm going to always be good.
I know that's right.
Indeed.
I'm good now. I could say that I was good earlier. And when you said about how to stay Black or how to not turn when me in while you're just in, while you're trying to fight for certain rights and certain causes, and just trying to keep your head up high and trying to keep yourself from becoming a statistic. But I had to do this afternoon, and it's odd that you sent me the message about the show tonight.
Right.
I was under attack. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, I fought myself out of it, however, but I had to resort to something that I did not want to do, which is call the police.
Oh, wow.
However, I called people that did not look like me, which was a good thing.
Okay.
Is still trying to fight for the respect, to fight for the acknowledgement, all right? Not that I need you to acknowledge that I exist, that I am a human being and I am breathing on this earth, and I will not accept the violence or the abuse that comes towards me. I don't care if I'm running for 50 offices. I will not be tread upon. All right? But let's start a step from that, okay? I think I got to take a whoosh off because I got that one.
I knew that's right. Well, listen, before we go into more about your campaign, why you're running, and what your platform is, share with the family a little bit about you.
Well, I am a 62-year-old woman who is a psychotherapist and a professor.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working the last 24 years, probably longer than that, servicing the communities, but the last 24 providing psychiatric or clinical services to people in need. Many
mm-hmm.
of it has been done, much of it has been done for free, trying to just help people to navigate through the system. Never do I take a client and not have a referral, a resolution, make contact for them, and help to navigate them through without them suffering through the madness that we quite often go through. I've been, I was caretaker of my mom for the last 10, 15 years, who passed away in March, and I am because she technically was who was technically murdered by the people in this building when they displaced her. So other than that, for the last, I stopped there for a reason. Other than that, I 10 years providing housing assistance to the residents. It started out first with the foreclosure crisis and having to learn how to tear a mortgage apart and seeing how these big banks and corporations, private investors, were in and taking from us that which we worked for all of our and then from there, you know, I warned everybody back then. I said, hey, you think that because they're doing what they're doing on the housing side, you know, the single-family homes or multifamily homes side of the house by taking your properties, that in sight I see it happening to rentals as well. And, of course, it has started hitting this area as well with the issues of affordable housing. Based on a median income that is inaccurate, that they're basing on a census, $80,000. Okay, I'm not saying that there are none, but I'm talking about in the more impoverished area where we know that some of these households don't make more than $25,000 a year. So all of this has come into play, and I literally have started a few lawsuits against some landlords. In addition to that, I filed federal RICO charges against many of the municipal, state, federal agencies and some of the private investors around that were involved, some of the big schemes that were here. Now, the one issue that I am noticing is that it seems like we're all individual back. The miscommunication comes in, and if we all stick together and fight, how we can't have a mighty win. So it's like we're all fighting. A lot of people think that it's embarrassing to have issues going on with housing. It is not. It was designed It is a social problem that was socially constructed by those that it will not impact. And the majority that are being impacted are people of color, of black and brown descent.
Okay.
So
I want you to just hold on there for one moment because we're going to get ready to bring in Dr. Carlita Atwater, who is running for president. How you like that? Wow.
I'm telling you that.
So listen.
Wonderful.
So stay. Yes. Yes. So stay right there, my sister. And we're going to come back to you in a few moments. And three areas that we're going to focus on tonight. So I just want to give you some little thought of, you know, give you time to think about these three areas. Of course, we're going to talk about the issue of black women and girls and violence and abuse. This being so-called National Domestic Violence Month, you know, it's every day for us, okay? And so we want to begin to look at that as black women because in that area of so-called social justice, it is white women that really are running stuff. I'm sure you're aware of that. But we want to make sure that our agenda, our voices, our way of doing things is now going to be a little more, shall we say, in the main frame of things. So I want you to stay right there. So that's one of the areas. The other one is, of course, the political arena, which is what we're talking about now. And the other thing we're going to talk about, too, is reparatory justice. So whatever that means to you, be it reparations, be it, you know, 40 acres and a mule, be it, you know, whatever, there's different things that are being said now. So I want you to give that some thought. We're going to come back to you in a few moments. So family, listen, we're going to go and open our live line up again. And this is definitely live, y'all, meaning, you know, to have these two sisters with us tonight. And as you can tell, they ain't shucking and jiving. Okay, this is what we have to do. We have to make sure that we talk now with folks who are intelligent, who have the you know, the various types of, for lack of a better word, if not credentials, at least qualifications or capabilities. And actually, that could be anyone at this point because we just had, not we, they just had somebody in there that was just an absolute, well, y'all know what he was. So he wasn't qualified to do nothing, but what he did, which was be, you know, a TV personality. But anyway, so listen, let's get ready to do this. Let's bring in Dr. Atwater again. She is running for President of the United States. Wow. So let's talk with her now and see what's going on in her world. Hey, Dr. Atwater, how are you this evening?
Hello, I'm doing just great. How about you, sister?
Wonderful. Listen, I got two powerful sisters on this line. How could I not be doing wonderful?
Yeah, I was listening to that sister, and I was just really impressed with all her abilities and strength. And just tell her to hold on, a change is going to come, because I received 50 threats when I was running for the governor of the state of Tennessee.
Listen, your mic is open, so you can actually talk with her right now because we're all in this conversation together. So
okay, it's nice to meet you, my sister. I was the first African American woman to run for the governor of the state of Tennessee, so I can identify with you with the threats. But I was prepared because, like all the other people, I believe in my Fifth Amendment also too, so I have 150, peace be still. So I was prepared. The enemy is necessary. The problem with us sometimes, we play too much and we stay too long. So what we're experiencing today, I prepared for 20 years ago. The housing disparities, the health care disparities, when we had the pandemic to hit us. I had food in my dwelling that could feed probably 500 people for the next 5 years. So we didn't have to depend on the government for anything, medical supplies, masks, food, diapers, things for the elders. We had it right here in our compound.
Wow, I knew that's right.
Wow.
And I know that's true, too. Yes, indeed.
So listen, Dr. Atwater, before we go into your campaign and, you know, what your projections are, what your mission is, just share a little bit about you, who you are, and why you do what you do.
Okay, I don't really call myself a politician. I call myself a lifetime community advocate. And so I've been on this battlefield for over 45 years. At the age of 7, I was busting my head, and I received 22 stitches on the civil rights movement line. My mother and father both was active community activists, and my uncle, Avery Henry, he was an activist also, too. So I was initiated as a child, and so I have the battle wound for that. But my purpose in Tennessee have been to be the anchor for people living in poverty-stricken communities. So I feed 10,000 individuals a year, homeless people. I donate 5,000 coats and gloves and hats per year. I donate 5,000 book bags for children. I have an underground railroad where I house domestic violence victims or survivors. So we house them in a private place, and then when we get apartments or houses, then they transition to those houses. I'm not new to this game that's being played. Also, I am the same person that filed a $20 billion lawsuit, which was called We Charge Genocide against the state of Tennessee, the city of Memphis, Shelby County, the state of Tennessee, and the governor that I ran against, who is a blatant racist, mean-spirited, evil person. But unfortunately, with the Willie Lynch syndrome, I don't know what's going to wake our people up. I won all over the state of Tennessee, but in my city that I have been dearly devoted to, they pretty much did not vote for me. I don't take things personal, but when you do things like that, you cut your own arm off, and I was trying to stop genocide here because I don't call it gentrification anymore. All over the United States, we are experiencing genocide. And so now they're going to have to go through some growing pain because sometimes we play too much and we stay too long. And so I see it in Chicago. I warned people in Chicago 30 years ago, Cabrina Green, that gentrification was coming. Atlanta, New York, Harlem looked like something. I don't know what it is now. You know, the culture is gone. And the people that's walking around there now in the dog trail and pedestrian walk and the bike trail, I don't know those people. They're not the people that I used to see in Harlem. So, again, we play too much. So many times we behind the curveball and we wait till something happen before we have a plan of action. And I think that's what make me uniquely different from most politicians. I'm not talking the talk. I'm walking the walk and been doing it for a long time. So they was truly afraid of me because they already knew I had a game plan. And in that game plan, you know, I talked about, because I didn't release my political platform until the day before the election. And I intentionally did that. But in my platform, you know, I talked about budgets or moral documents, and we must address that because we cannot address poverty or economic disparities, healthcare disparities, or homelessness or domestic violence until we address budgets or moral documents. We're not moving anywhere. Until we address taxation without representation, we're not going anywhere. So I threw a curveball on it because one thing, you have to get up early in the morning to beat me when it comes to putting some agendas together. So they wasn't ready.
Hello?
So what they did, they brought their little black coons out to derail me. And so they may have undermined me as far as the governorship, but they weren't prepared for me the day after saying that I was running for the president of the United States in 2024. Hello, somebody. See, they didn't know that. See, they should have Googled me. They should have Googled me right. See, when you go, when you step to me, you better do a full Google search. And they would have known not to play with me, because I tell people all the time in this body, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Fannie Lou Hamer, and Shirley Chisholm is in this soul. So they should have been prepared. But I'm preparing my sister to talk to you about the agenda about black women with violence and abuse and the political arena. See, I make no apology for running for governor, and I make no apology for running. I think I'm the best qualified person for the job in this space at this point. What I have to do is convince the black folks, because I speak truth to power. I don't care if you black, white, brown, or yellow. No one can say I lied on the political trail, because I spoke truth to power the whole time.
All right. Wow, wonderful. So, Cynthia, you look like you're in good company. Y'all, the two of you are in good company, because the spirit is, you know, pretty much the same. We're talking about that warrior, sister warrior spirit, you know, and this is what we need in this day and age. We don't need some weak behind people trying to, you know, do some stuff, because they're going to get eat up, tricked up, and all other kinds of stuff in this thing. If you don't have not only a thick skin, but some smarts in your head and a certain level of tenacity, you can forget it. And so you sisters definitely are representing that. So, wow. All right, let's go back to Sister Cynthia here, and let's talk a little bit about, okay, let's look at the issue of violence and abuse. Now, you, of course, have been on our program a few times, and in that have shared, you know, a story, a personal story in regards to violence and abuse. What do you foresee doing as a black woman to actually do something that we know is going on in our communities nationwide? What are you looking at possibly, not possibly, but what is your agenda, or what is your focus when it comes to lessening? See, I always, you know, we use the word stop, but I'm, you know, I'm a realist. So I know we've got to lessen some stuff first before we stop anything, because that ain't happening like that. So realistically, you know, what are your thoughts about what can we do, or what are you talking about or thinking about doing that is literally going to deal with this these issues now of all types of violence and abuse? I'm not just talking about domestic. I'm talking about all types of violence and abuse. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, let me tell you, I've been fighting nonstop. I mean, my personal stories, and I don't mind anybody ever knowing. I was actually raped and beaten by a Newark police officer. I always make sure I let the city be known, because they've been getting away with things forever. And I'm sure as many police stations have been, because it's looking the other way, because it's an automatic social construct, a social problem where it's determined that women are weaker than men. Therefore, we are there to be dominated and abused, and they can do whatever they want to, all right? And, of course, a man set that construct in place. However, my initial goal is, number one, for us to understand that that violence is wrong, to understand that yelling, screaming, fighting, somebody demeaning you, belittling you is violence. For us to understand ourselves from within, that we are not here to be abused, to understand and to develop that self-concept, you know, and I'm talking about that from a clinical perspective. Not only do we have to work on the outside forces, but we have to do a lot of introspection and a lot of interwork in order to make things understandable for us as people, especially people of color, because that's what I can speak to you about 100%, because I am that person as well, speaking from me, okay? So we know that we have this old system that's in place, that's been there for hundreds of years. There is no such thing as stopping it without, listen, real talk. The only way we're going to be able to get rid of all of that is by all of those people dying. And that sounds terrible. But as long as there is... Huh?
No, I was laughing.
Continue.
As long as there is the system of passing that information down from generation to generation, it's a learned contextual thing where it's okay to do X, Y, and get away with it. So when we're looking at violence across the board, then number one has to be the understanding that what is happening is violent, because a lot of people think that what's happening is the norm. How do we get rid of the norm unless we change the narrative?
Mm.
But my main goal, I'm telling you, that situation with the House, the Senate, all of those people up there making those rules, those old folks that have been in there forever, and I'm old too, y'all. We need to clean house. Because that old nonsense has to go. We need fresh blood. We need people in office that are willing to enact change, people that are willing to accept it. And it's not about yelling and screaming in the street. It's about people coming together collectively. Let's rewrite the rules. Let's rewrite everything to make it go a way that is suitable for all. That's including that crazy constitution that still hasn't been corrected with the three-fifths of a human being that's still calling us Negroes. Okay? All of that needs to be done. And until we start with ourselves, we have to understand that concept of self and move forward. So there's a lot of things that need to happen on a base level. Then we keep moving up each step. But my main, the first thing I want to do is put review boards in order all over the place so that we can review everything that's happened. We need open requests out. We need to start checking budgets. We need to start checking everything and doing reviews so that the corruption disappears. We're looking at high-level collusion across the board. Again, the only way we're going to deal with it, if it sounds bad, is those people that have been up there that's 70, 80, and 90 years old, if they don't die off and just stop with their legacy, we're not ahead. So me, I want to bring a perspective in. I'm addressing things. I'm going head on, and I'm showing them that, listen, we're not all just going to be complacent and sit back and take your crap, all right? You pick up a stick and swing it at me, trust me, I'm going to swing a stick back. And that's proverbial. It somehow we get caught up into the system of if we yell back at you, we are considered as being wild because that's our nature. It is
all
our
right.
nature to learn to fight back because we have been abused for all these years. Am I going to call it Willie Lynch or intergenerational issues that we have? It is. They are. However, we have to start with that inner work in order to move forward. That's why I put my all into my therapeutic services. And when I'm talking to somebody, it's about building up from the inside and understanding your value and building up your self-concept. From there, we can start taking care of everything else. All right? And it's not going to be easy.
Right.
It may not get done. It probably won't get done in my lifetime. But I'm going to fight every step of the way.
All right. I say. All right. Dr. Atwater, what are your thoughts in terms of addressing the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that as she was talking, I also, and I mentioned it on my gubernatorial campaign trail, I was also a victim of rape. Matter of fact, my first encounter of sex was rape at 16.
Mm.
And then my first marriage, I was a victim of domestic violence. But I have only been hit once in my lifetime, and when my first husband hit me, I made sure that he didn't put his hand on no other woman because with that one lick, it was some consequences when he put his hands on me. So, but not all women are that strong. He regret that they did that. because of the way I reacted, because if I did not react that way, then he probably would have been beating me for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I make no apologies for that. And so I, from that experience, I became a rape and a domestic violence advocate. My background is public health administration and education and community education. Mm-hmm. So I have also been a counselor for over 15 years, but mainly military families. And you find a lot of domestic violence in the military family. But I'm a strategic person, and I don't do anything on a whim. When I went into that governorship, I had action plans of what I was going to do to move the state of Tennessee forward. And with that, I have action plans to how I'm going to move every state across the United States forward when it comes to domestic violence and abuse of women and girls. And so one of the things that I have incorporated in my campaign is called WOMEN, W-O-M-E-N. And that stands for Women Opportunity Manifesting Equity Now. And what I mean by that, I'm going to approach the domestic violence situation across the state of Tennessee from a holistic approach, a point of view, because what we're dealing with is multi-level, multi-faceted. So we have to address some cultural issues there. We have to address historical issues, some mental issues there, drug abuse issues, and male chauvinistic views of how they view women. And so across the state of across the United States now, you have men folks, for the most part, and white women pushing laws and bills and resolutions to take us back 100 years, starting with the abortion laws that they passed. And some of these abortion laws encompass when you get raped, even if you rape from your father, your grandfather, your uncle, they're talking that a woman do not have the jurisdiction of her body. She's still supposed to have that baby. That is antiquated and barbaric. And as I was listening to the sister, I totally agree with her. Some mindset has to change if we're going to move forward. But some of the things I want to address, I would work to ensure that every woman can make the best decision for herself and her family without the political interference of politicians.
Uh-huh.
And then uniquely, I have designed that WOMEN program because I want to address the domestic violence counterpart in that program. And with that, it's going to entail wraparound programs to secure the safety and the well-being of women that is caught up in the cycle of abuse, human trafficking, mental illness, and drug addiction. Yeah. If we do not address those, because I'm on boots on the ground every day working with women that's been raped every night on the streets of Memphis, and due to them living homeless or they on drugs or have mental health issues or just living in poverty, other issues that they're dealing with, domestic violence, so they ran off from their boyfriend or their husband. So I want to have programs set aside so that you don't just have them to go in for 24 hours and release them back on the streets, because we have to be very clear and precise how we're going to address these women, because sometimes you can do more harm than good if you just take them in temporarily and then put them back on the streets, because sometimes they go right back to the abuser, because people do what they know best, what they've been doing all the time. So one of the things that was unique in this program, and I won't go through the whole thing, but one of the things that was unique in this program, and we have to work with the sheriff department too, because you have bias and prejudice in the police department and the sheriff department. And when she was talking about being raped by a police officer, I know about 50 women that were raped by a police officer this year in Memphis. So as he was talking, I was nodding my head. But we need to have a protective order, a piece of paper, a justice order where a woman, if she's in a situation where she's being abused or in a domestic violence situation, we should have something in place where we could change that person's Social Security number or even change her name so that that person could not be traced down by the domestic violence person. Because sometimes just removing them and changing their address, if someone wants to find you, they can find you. And restraining orders does not save people's lives. So I want to, as a president, I want to go farther than what we're doing now, because what we're doing now is putting a bandage on a third-degree burn.
That's
if we're
right.
truly about saving women's life, we're going to have to go farther than these bills, these superficial generic bills they're putting on the table. Because if you pull the stats all across the United States, women still getting killed by their partner. They still getting killed because we know that, you know, the largest profession is prostitution. Because when people are strung out on drugs or living in poverty, they're going to do whatever it takes to survive by any means necessary. So we must do that.
Right.
And I want to be a proactive president. I want to be a uniquely different president. I compare myself, and I've been researching all the presidents. I went back to Biden. I went back to Obama. Yeah. Okay. And all these presidents, the Democrats, have they truly helped the black and brown community? Even when Obama went into office, you know, that's when we really should have got reparations. And I want to wrap reparations into mine. I want to be the first president that certainly talk about reparations. Not only talk about it, because they study, and we don't have to study. You can go in our neighborhood and see we need reparations. So what you studying about? With all the people dying every day in our community, suffering every day, losing their homes every day, living in poverty every day. What you studying? So that's just playing games right there. So I want to be, if you look at my platform when I ran for governor, at the end of that platform, it talks about restorative reparation. So I put it out there when I was running for governor, and that's one of the things that's on my agenda when I'm running for president, is to put reparation on the agenda. Because if the president does not do it, it would never get done.
All right. I know that's right. Woo! All right now. Okay, so listen, before we go back to Sister Cynthia, let me just say, wow, that was powerful. I want to do a little sidebar real quick with Dr. Atwater, and that is you ran for governor, and again, as it was indicated, the first black woman to run for the governor of Tennessee. But I think it's important that we also note that you got half the votes and now she went up against the machine because the Democratic Party endorsed that person. So that means, you know, they had the money, all of that. They had everything that they needed. And so our sister went up against that with her own initiative, her own, you know, whatever, and got half of the votes. That is incredible. That just, go ahead, sister. You got to say something about that.
I like to speak truth to power. And one thing I do not do, I don't sugarcoat anything. I'm going to call it out, and I'm going to call it like I see it. As the first African-American woman to run for the governor of the state of Tennessee, five things happened. One, I had three political leaders that was in my county, Shelby County. They brought this white guy to run against me as the governor. So two of my state representatives and one of my senators brought this white guy down to Shelby County to announce he was running against me while I was sitting in the political arena in the Democratic Party meeting they had. The second thing was when they brought the white guy down to run against me, then you have these people in Shelby County put this young millennial in the race to divide the black votes. That was another thing they did in the Democratic Party. Well, see, I always have a Trump card before November the 8th. I got an early Christmas present from them. So you don't mess with Harriet Tubman and think you're going to go somewhere. The next thing is a miracle, because I did not put not one political sign out. I did not do any advertisement. All the media, none of the media did any media coverage on me. That's to skew the election. They went to both of the other candidates who was males, but they never acknowledged me at all. Then the guy who was supposed to be doing my website, too, ran off with my money. My website was only completed the day before my election. So therefore, I received 56,000 votes across the state of Tennessee, and I didn't have a political sign nowhere. So it's a miracle. See, that's the thing about it. When it's for you, it's for you. The only reason I didn't win this governorship is because of the willingness mindset in Memphis, which predominant black people. See, that self-hatred, people, we got to get past this foolishness, that envy and jealousy. And saddest thing about it, we have a Shelby County women, Democratic women group here. None of them in that group acknowledge me as a woman running. Something wrong with the picture. I can't help because I'm cute and all that and a bag of tip. I can't help that. So sometimes, my sister, a lot of times people want you to make apologies for them doing wrong to you. And I've been weighing them out on my Facebook Live, because you have to speak truth to power. And I also know if I had won that election, it would have been a possibility they would have tried to take my life. But see, I'm a loner. I had already thought about that. They sent some moles to me. They sent about 40 men to me to make Dr. Atwater. Do you think you want? Let's go out on a date. I don't have to go on no date. I can feed myself. I don't eat but $14 a day. I'm a vegetarian. So they send back 40 men. I said, hold up, where all these men come from? Now, most men, they run from me. They don't run toward me. What's going on here? But I had already figured that out. Okay? It was exciting. I learned a lot from that. One thing they cannot take, they may have stole the election, but they cannot take away from me. I am historically the first African-American black woman to ever run for the governor of the state of Tennessee. And I have a book deal and a film from that. A film deal from that.
Wow!
But thank you for bringing that out.
Absolutely, because it's all for me. It's so important when it comes to being the first to something. I think that's so important. It creates a whole kind of different feeling and just. It's just so important, particularly for our young girls right now. So that's another reason why we have to highlight our accomplishments, and particularly, to be the first in something that has a real powerful historical significance. I know. Believe me. All right. Listen, let's go back to Cynthia. And Cynthia, let me ask you, and Dr. Atwood already kind of mentioned the issue of reparatory justice, reparations. What are your thoughts about that in terms of reparation? You're talking about going into Congress. And here, Congress has had the H.R. 40 for, 30 years? And it's still not passed. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, let me tell you, why would people who made the majority of their money, and that's including those that are in Congress and still making money off of our backs, want to, all right? We got to and understand that we are in the plight that we are in because of greed. And these same greedy people still exist. They're family members, and it was passed down from one to the next. As long as they keep this dangling over our heads, they think, hey, we've got them, you know, stirred up. They think that we're thinking about them, and therefore we're moving forward. We're not moving forward. We're stagnant, all right? It's more than stagnant. We're going backwards, just as the doctor just said, okay? It's the, look, when I think about reparations, what I'm thinking is I start calculating, all right? I can't remember where my family came from, but from what I understand, we came from this part. We went to this plantation. You made this amount of money off of each slave that was there, which means that you made it off of the backs of my grandparents. I want interest, and I want what I want, okay? So this is how I think about that. But reparations across the board, we are in the situation that we are in, designated areas that are designated as the urban area, all right? We want to have this piece of land designated for impoverished people, extremely impoverished people, homeless people. And these are all socially constructed. So until we level the playing field, we are always going to be in the same position that we're in, whether we get reparations or not, because how do they determine? Because somebody else is going to determine how much we get, what we get, if we get it. Yes, I want 40 acres and a mule. No, I want 80 and 2 mules, okay? For each one of my ancestors that you destroyed, for each one of us that you tormented and you stripped us of our identities to the point where a lot of us are traveling back to Africa and paying these agencies to try to backtrack who we are and what's going on with us and how we got into the positions that we're in. We all deserve something. When we look at the major constructs around the White House, all right, the monument, the this and the that, who built them? Who were the architects? Who were the architects? It all started with us. So why do we have to ask somebody to give us something back for what they stole from us? I'm in the mindset of I'm tired of asking. I'm ready to take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. All right.
All right.
Well, you know, I'm sure you've heard one of our plans of action, and we'll be implementing it in about a week as a first step. But okay, great. Thank you so much for that response from both of you. And this is what we're talking about, coming up with additional strategies to do these things. And this is what we now have to start looking more at, what is going to be the modes of operations that is going to bring about the various changes that we're talking about. So, you know, I know you don't want to put the strategies out too much on a public broadcast, but at the same time, you know, we need to make sure that our people know that there are, in fact, some different modes of operations that are being developed and being ready for implementation, because we know what we want, but what I'm not hearing often from most is how we gonna do it. See, therein is the real challenge. So listen, before we go back into that part of the dialogue, let's just go briefly into this whole political arena, or shall we say, the political machinery that we're subjected to, this two-party thing for the most part. So of course, there's some other entities out there, but they don't, you know, get any real headway or whatever. How do you both feel that you're going to be able to interact in these various parties in such a way where, because like for Dr. Edwards, she literally ran on the Democratic Party. So knowing how these people operate, for example, we had a brother here in Philly. His name was Representative Dave P. Richardson. Brilliant black man, and he would tell you straight up, I'm a black man first. That's how serious he was in his speeches and presentations. He let people know, yeah, I'm a politician, but I'm a black man first. At any rate, you know, one of the things that we've learned from a few folks is when you're dealing with having to vote on stuff, right, in order to get your bills across or other things, and again, I'm not speaking about the presidential stuff at this point, but the other arenas or the other parts of it, in order to get your bills through, all the people have to vote on it. And so the way we know this game is played and the deck gets stacked is it's really oftentimes a quid pro quo, meaning a representative tends to vote for somebody else's bill in order for their bill to get some votes. So what are y'all's thoughts about that? This is how some of this actually goes. In other words, you just don't introduce legislation and just automatically think, well, okay, because I'm introducing this. The reality is this stuff gets blocked or you don't get the votes that you want. And often the reason why that happens is because they make these internal deals with each other. Okay, you vote on my legislation and I'll vote on yours. This is partially how the game is played. It's quite as discussed. So with that said, what are your plans in dealing with some of these roadblocks?
Well, one of the things I talked about on my campaign running for governor, the first thing that was on my political agenda was political and judicial corruption. So until we can address the corruption that's going on, and when I say corruption, it's deeper than just them going in the back room and voting on each other's bill. Also, you have to bring in the PACs, who they are really committed to, because you have trillions of dollars being given for favors. And that's why you want to have to address political corruption to even change those narratives right there. You will have to address that. And that would take people from judges to politicians going to jail. And so I was very adamant about, because I already know the game. I've been dealing with politics almost 40 years. I just never want to be a politician. So I've seen what the game is about. But before they even have the vote on what they voted on, when you go back and pull the research, and I'll give you an example. When I was running for governor, I pulled a lot of research. I pulled about 150,000 documents that I was reading. And how you can identify corruption, you have to pull the city and county budget.
Those
budgets, and if when I went to University of Tennessee, we had 7 debates there. And they really hate they even put me on the debate because I put it out there to them. I say, now, we're at UT with debates, and you didn't bring the governor for him to debate with us. And the reason they didn't, because UT stands to gain $1 trillion from this governor now. $250 million was going to Oak Ridge, Tennessee. See, I was not supposed to know that, and two other that was running with me, they just want to have a political position. They didn't do their homework. And so I said many times, see, some of these people need to go to jail. While you're talking about making money out of prison, you all are the real criminals. So to fight the system that we deal with today, you will have to be astute enough to go in and do some underground research so you will have the ammunition to fight this corruption that's been going on for decades. Other than that, it's just going to be about talking. Now, you risk the chance of losing your life, too. But I believe in if you can't run with the big dogs, you got to stay on the porch. So certain things I put out there, even running for governor, it shocked them. And I had people call, girl, you're going to get yourself killed. Am I not talking to you today? So it's deep. This thing is real. You ever wonder why they haven't put President Trump in jail yet? Why is it taking them so long to put this man in jail? Because they know a lot more have to go with him. They know the game. See, we're the only one being naive when they did the insurrection. I look at that, and that turns my stomach today.
If that had been black and brown people going up there and doing what they did at that Capitol, it would have been another bloody Sunday.
But these people killed people.
They killed people and went back home, and they hadn't found 90% of those people, and a lot of them from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we got some KKKs here now. And they up in New York. And, you know, another question should be, why so many people getting killed up north? Because sometimes I live in New York and Chicago.
Right.
Sometimes they walk around with their blinders on. Like, you know, whatever going down south, it don't happen here. No, because they're putting your dead body in them dumpsters and you don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over. California. See,
right.
We've been too complacent. We've been too complacent. So when you're complacent like that, people do at will what they want to do to who, what they call modern-day slaves. And most of us now, black folks, are acting like modern-day slaves because we get our little old degrees, we go in the suburbs, and we forget to reach back and pull up. I have always remained, I got other houses too now because I'm not stupid, but I have always been anchored in the hood. Okay,
yes.
So, but it's more layers in place. And then let's just talk about the people that look like us. If you don't stand for something, I don't care where they put you at, what space they put you at, Clarence Thomas. If you don't stand for something, how can you be a, I'm going to put it out there, how can you be a Supreme Court judge married to this white woman? I don't even know how he can trust her, but. And then you get up in there and you say you don't believe in affirmative action. See, it's people like that that we need to remove and recall. We need some people to stand for something. And the only thing I can tell you is that Dr. Courtney Atwater, I stand for something. And I'll put it out there. See, so we have some problems in our own community. We need to address some problems. No longer should we let black politicians stay in office 4 to 8 years and they're not doing anything that benefit our community. We need to recall them. I say 90 days. If they hadn't showed their hand in 90 days, recall them. Send them home.
But
that's our problem.
Somehow they think that they are locked into those seats once they get in. They get out here, campaign, make all of these promises, and know they're lying through their teeth. I only want to see you long enough to know that you went to the polls, or I'm going to make you so uncomfortable, all right, that you're going to say to yourself, my vote doesn't count, therefore you won't come to the polls and vote. All right, the only way to get rid of them. We do what we're
one
supposed
of the
to
problems,
do.
One of the problems that exists, and I'm going to let you finish that, but one of the problems that exists is that in most communities, our people are sheeple. And so the politricksters do what they do because they know they can, because the average black person in our community is going to really follow the party. And so they know that. So essentially what I'm saying is that in our communities, our people for the most part are often not politically astute. And these people take advantage of that. So while we are saying this is what we should do, we should recall and all of that, on the real, until our people are, shall we say, brought kind of up, a bit up, in terms of really understanding, overstanding the political game and have some actual strategies and things of that nature, that they're going to continue to do what they do, because a lot of our people really believe this stuff. Y'all know that, right? They literally believe that they're voting for the president. They really believe that. Most have no idea about electoral college or how that works or the preludes to it, or they don't know this stuff. They literally think that, you know, the politicians are, you know, this, and that, and that. And so until there's a totally different mindset, again, I don't believe in none of this stuff in terms of believing in it. See, yes, we got to deal with it. We have to interact in it. But do I believe it? Do I promote it? Hell no. But I know we have to do it.
Yeah, this is the thing, and I like to keep life real with reality. So many times, you know, I've been in so many meetings where people, brothers and sisters talk about, you know, we need our own party. We need this and we need that. But let's keep this thing real. No one is going to take us serious if we've been talking for 30 and 40 years about our own party. The second thing is I believe in accountability. And maybe we will be dead before it happened. But as a people, we have to take some accountability for our own action. And what I mean by that, we can look up and Google everything else. We know how to twerk. We know how to do all this. So if we can waste, we got children know how to twerk at 4 or 5. If we can waste that much time on foolishness and nonsense, and so we have to, as a people, take some responsibility for our own action. Now, I did many community sessions trying to educate people about the political process and all that. If our people are not interested, they're going to slow you down. It appears to me that our people, when it comes to feeding their soul with things that will move them forward and help them to grow, they are not interested in it. And I just give you an example. When I have free community sessions, it may be 10 or 12 people. But when I give coats away, a bicycle away, they line up 1,200 strong.
Right.
So our people just going to have to suffer the dire consequence until they wake up. We won't be able to save all of them. You know, Harriet Tubman, she could have saved a lot more slaves. They only knew they were slaves. So we have the mindset. We know what needs to happen. We have the mindset. We know what we need to do. But our people, and I'm a good example, here you have the first black woman to ever run for governor. And these people, they know the history of what I have done in this community, and they still didn't vote for me. Who problem is that? So that won't change. They have to take some accountability. Now, let's talk about the Democratic and the Republican Party. And we know about the independent and the socialist group and the libertarian and all this old stuff. But most black folks, for the most part, vote Democrat. They leave the Democratic Party, to be honest about it. But if you get on a ticket as an independent, you doomed to not win because they don't vote Democrat. That's just they might. They don't vote independent or socialist or libertarian or whatever. I have said for years we need our own party, but we're not unified to do that. We ain't running nothing but our mouth. And then even some of the people in Memphis, you know what? The conscious people, that's what broke my heart. The power to the people. Those are the people that did not vote for me and have the nerve to come up and talk about reparations, had free conference in my building, and these are the people that did not vote for me. Something wrong with that picture. So we have to go back and get that slavery, what I won't say slavery because even a slave knew how to run off. So we got some mental illness in our community we need to address. Because anytime you go against a person that have a proven record of loving you and taking care of you and supporting you, and you vote against that person, is something mentally wrong with that. And I didn't take it personal because I said, you know, if so let it be. I'm going because Memphis have been gentrified. I fought against the Memphis 3.0. It's been gentrified because they did not want to listen. Now, I get 100 calls a day now. You know, they get ready to foreclose on my home. They get ready to evict me. Oh, really? So how do we educate our people? How do we educate them? They can turn on foolishness.
Right. Oh, no doubt. I mean, the same thing here in Philly. We told them 10 years ago what was going on with gentrification and told them then also that gentrification was a form of genocide, and they laughed. They would not, they wouldn't believe it or didn't want to believe it and didn't want to deal with that kind of reality. And so now it is so evident, you know, the way that the city has given.
I walk away from my phone for 1 minute. Hold on.
Okay. The way the city has given away to the developers. But anyway, wow. I mean, this is just incredible. But going back to what we are saying is that at this stage of the game, we already know that as the old spiritual saying goes from the church, not everybody's going to be saved. We kind of know this at this point in time.
Right.
And so, you know, right now we're doing what we have to do to, at least for me, I'm doing what I got to do to get out of this. I'm not trying to change America beyond a certain point. I'm not trying to, you know, make it great or better or whatever they be talking about. Not me. It doesn't deserve that kind of time for me. So it is to do what we need to do to get our own, to do what we need to do to move forward. But for me to be trying to make this place better beyond a certain point, nah, that's not my job.
Just slow you down. But, yes, we have some major problems in our black community. It's no one answer, no right answer for it because we have lost 100 years of what we had gained.
Yep,
so how
that's
do
right.
I look at the city of Memphis. We used to own 91% of the black people in Memphis owned their homes. It's an article came out. Memphis had more black home ownership than any city in the United States in 91. Now we own only 34% of the home ownership and 63% of the people are renters. Well, we know that if you're renters, you would never have generational wealth passed down.
Right.
So
that's
now
right.
We're back to slavery again, sharecropping.
Right. Wow. So, you
so
know,
how do we address
this? It's clear. Yeah, it's clear what we have to do. And like you said, sister, it's been 100 years. To know that the Honorable Marcus Garvey did what he did 100 years ago during a time period where you can walk down the street and get lynched. And
right.
So here we are today having all of this stuff, access to information, access to this. This is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
So we play too much and stay too long. We are people that play too much. And I'll give you an example. I watch people all the time. I'm very observant. I don't have to do a lot of talking. Most of the time when I'm in a conference, I had a conference at my place Friday. All 200 conscious people. They had the African town, the Kufi on, and all it looked like coming to America up in my building. And so I was just watching them. And they was talking about what they did 20, 30, 40 years ago. And I'm like, people living in poverty now. People getting evicted now.
Right.
So what are you talking about? And everything was braggadocious. What they did 20, how they marched 20 years. And I'm thinking, these boys need your help now. These girls need your help now. Why are you
That's
not
right.
feeding the homeless? So, and I just listened at that. And then at the end, the white guy, because they had a lot of white folks there. He said, well, Dr. Atwater, what do you think about the meeting? I said, you really do not want to know. To be honest about it, so don't ask me my opinion. You really do not want to know. And if they had been truthful with me, I never would have let them have this conference. It was a young black guy. I love him dearly. He never told me what it was really about. He said, Center for Transforming Communities. Well,
right.
Most of the people he brought to the table did not have anything to do with the communities.
Wow.
These are just people taking money from the – see, I refuse to be owned by anybody. I'm free. And so I have never taken money from the local, state, or federal.
All
never.
Right.
So that way they can't control me. So that's why when I ran for governor, I could say what I want to say. And as a president, I wish Donald Trump will pop his head up. He ought to be in jail by that time. And I'm not worried about Biden. I'm not worried about Biden. He ain't did nothing. I can overshadow him right now. So it's one of those things that, and Obama didn't do anything for black folks, so we ain't got to worry about that. I studied all these provident. What have they done for us lately? Now, this is the problem, my sister. First of all, in the United States, we still do not, as black women, have respect from people, and sadly from our black people, and sadly from black women.
Black women
goes more than anybody. But until black women get past this jealousy and envy and undermining, I don't know where we're going to go. I don't know where we're going to go. Because they don't think that we have good leadership skill. I was the most qualified person, Republican or Democrat, on the ticket. None of them could explain. I had a crime prevention plan. I had a women's rights plan, a homeless plan, where I was going to take homeless to home ownership. And then the white guy didn't have no plan. He was reading out some notes. The black guy was just telling Paula lies because he's a city councilman, and he still didn't do anything as a city council. I was the only one brought something to the table. So I don't know what it's going to take for us as black people to wake up. I don't have that answer. Do not have it.
Yeah, well, I don't either, but I kind of have an idea. You know, after seeing COVID, I suspect that somewhere down the road, like the sister was saying, it might not be in our lifetime, but definitely is going to be somewhere down the road. They're going to pull another similar kind of thing, and it's going to be devastating. And because they saw how people reacted this time, and they end up buying into this whole thing, so they already know how they can, deal with some processes of elimination pretty well under the guise of public safety. So this won't be the last of what we have just seen in some other form. So maybe something like that to have a COVID situation to really be of a certain type and a certain level, maybe that might produce some other kinds of awakening, you see. But
you know, it's so funny, when COVID came about, the epidemic, pandemic, a friend of mine said, Carnita, you remember when we was in epidemiology class and you predicted something like this was going to happen? I said, yes. But they haven't seen anything yet, because now looking, because you have so many large corporations trying to buy the water rights. See, we have a lot of things going on at one time. Not only COVID, because even when I was campaigning, they was talking about COVID from the hospital perspective. I say, but you're not addressing COVID from the prison perspective. A lot of prisons died because they didn't get any preventive measures or whatever in the jail, and homeless people. Now, I didn't take the vaccination because that's one of the things the Democratic Party did to punish me. Our first gubernatorial debate, they didn't allow me to come to the first debate because I refused to take the vaccination.
Right.
Okay, I own my body. You're not going to tell me that I get to take a vaccination in order to do a debate. So I didn't show up. I'm not going to do that. I haven't taken no vaccination. Okay, I eat pretty good. I exercise and all that. And then if I had a caught COVID as a restaurant, I know how to take care of myself, but I wasn't going to no hospital. Did they not put that pillow on top of Dr. Martin Luther King's face? The doctor killed him. So I don't go no matter hospital, no. They would have killed me for sure. And as a politician, I tell anybody, you have to be careful when you're running for political office, going to these people's hospital. I don't trust them.
Right.
Even as a nurse, I don't trust them. And so, therefore, you can't put nothing in my arm. So no, I'm one of the last of the Mohican. I didn't take no vaccination. Not going to take it. And the Pfizer.
No, me either, sister. Don't, you ain't the last one. I ain't doing that, none of that either. And interestingly enough, it was so funny because, you know, I was supposed to come and visit with you right when COVID hit, and I had gotten ill. Now, we didn't know it was a COVID or whatever, whatever, but I just thought that was so interesting. But nevertheless, I'm with you. I'm not taking no vaccine either. But, wow. Again, I suspect something else will be happening before it's over and done with because we see what happened with this one. Whew. All right, family, listen, I'm going to go to the boards to see if anyone has a question or a comment. And if you do, you can press one now. This has been a fiery dialogue, and we're going to be doing it again next week. We're going to be doing some more sessions that focuses on the MWM Black Print Agenda 25. And this is one of the areas, actually two, the Million Woman Party. Now, some clarity, we're not trying to create a party like the Democratic or Republic or whatever. It's more like the Black Panther Party in that we're focusing on educating our people, in this case our women in particular, when it comes to knowing, understanding the things that are relevant to the political processes, be it electoral or what have you. Also, of course, looking at supporting campaigns, supporting our people's campaigns financially, with boots on the ground kinds of things. This is what our party is about, doing research, doing analysis, things of that nature. But again, it's a party for self-determination, self-reliance, and self-defense. That's what our party is about, the Million Woman Party. Okay, doesn't look like anybody has a question or a comment, and I think we lost Dr. Atwater. I see that her call dropped, so maybe she'll be calling back in shortly. So I'm going to go back to Sister Cynthia. Sister Cynthia, what are your steps now? For your campaign, what's going to be happening, Mr. Well, first of all, when is the election?
I believe it's November 8th. You know, Yeah, it's very soon. One of the biggest issues for me is that we have the person that's in office, the Democratic person, who absolutely does nothing. And you know, the one thing that I don't do is just slam other people. You are
right.
Who you are.
Right.
But if you're not doing anything to help the community, if you're not doing anything at all, you don't respond to messages, you can't get an appointment with him, and I'm running against you. All right, that's an issue. And I haven't been able to get him in years. Okay, so someone set up a debate before. It wasn't even really a debate. It was a discussion platform. And there wasn't too much that he talked about with me. You know, I loved his father when he was in there. He was very approachable. You talk to him about something, you could see the concern. This one is just blank, pale. All right? So what I always look for, and, you know, when Dr. Atwater was talking about doing the research, checking the budget, yes, that's the first thing. But let me tell you, the first thing I look for is I pull up every candidate and see what donations they got and where they got it from. And quite frequently you see these large corporations and banks donate like $250.
Right.
And you want to ask, okay, why did you take a donation so small? And what was the point? What was the goal? All that is mm-hmm. okay, I'm with you, you've got me. That to me is betrayal. And
wow.
If you are not seeing just yourself and just saying, this is what I represent, and I cannot be bought, all right? And that someone has promised you, okay, you're going to get this amount of money in office. You know, if you vote for my bill, I'll vote for yours, and on like that. That's too much compromise. What are you giving away, and what part of you is still in this process? You have been bought. Because if it's something that you believe in, you're going to vote for it anyway. If it's some bull crap on the table, why would you vote for that even to get your bill crossed? That doesn't make any sense to me. It's the game. Again, another social construct that is a social problem that was created and gets dictated to by, dictated by others. We have to play, you've got to play to be in it. I don't want to play.
Yeah, that's one of the sayings that they have here. You got to play to pay or pay to play. Yeah, pay to play. That's what they call it, pay to play. Yeah.
And it's
okay.
We're giving up our soul.
Looks like Dr. Edward is back. I'm going to bring her back in. Hold on one moment. Let me bring her in. And then I want you to finish your I just want to get her. Okay, we got her. Okay, go ahead and finish what you were saying, my sister.
Yeah, it's giving up your soul for a change. You get some of them that get into office. You make $300,000 or more, and you lose your mind. Man, this is a job for me now, all right? I can't give up my livelihood. I've got to keep this job, so I've got to continue to play the game. Your game interferes with everyone else's livelihood. Your game is only your gain. And that's a problem. If you cannot be realistically and individually yourself when you come into these offices, that's when the jail time comes in. We're looking at high-level collusion. And yes, like Dr. Atwater said, it is a dangerous game. My mouth sometimes I think is going to be the death of me, most definitely. And then I thought, first, they start looking at RICO charges, corruption filed against them. I tell you, one of my biggest things was I was always worried about my mother. I said, okay, I do this, I do that. Is my mother safe? Okay, you know, I hate that she's not here. But I also say thank the ancestors that she's not, because I know she's safe.
Right.
All right? That nobody can harm her anymore. And I have to put faith in and believe in what she taught me and the strength that she passed on to me to move forward. My mom was always a fighter. And she always said to me, never give up, never ever give up. And when you're walking forward, if a brick wall steps up in front of you, because she said they will, you turn to the right and you keep turning until you get through, and eventually you will. Don't stop going. Dr. Atwater, you running for presidency is an inspiration to me, and I am volunteering my services to you right now. Whatever you need from me, I'm there for you. We all need to sit down and do some things, and let's figure it out. We're not going to tell anybody where we're going to be, when we're going to be there, so no accidents happen. But we need to pull it together and figure out what we're doing next and what's the best strategy to get you into office. I'm with you.
She and I think so much alike, because as she was talking, the same thing is happening here. Where you have these people, they won't return your calls or emails, and they get reelected again and serving their own self-serving purpose or whatever the case. So we experience the same thing here. But as she was talking, I was thinking, what can I do to help her election November the 8th? So I was thinking flying there to help you, my sister.
All right. That's what we're talking about.
Your election November the 8th this year, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And that you did, not putting out the flyers. This was my second time running. The first time, I think I shocked everybody. There was the Democrat, the Republican, me, and then two behind me. Coming in third place kind of shook everybody up, because I was a nobody coming out of some, you know what I mean?
All right now.
So there's about, I think, like five or six of us on the ballot this time, and I'm sure I'm going to crunch some of them out of the way. So, you know, that's the tenacity and the resilience in me and my belief that although I may not get number one. I'm fighting for it, okay? Because most of us vote Democratic, all right? At some point, I'm trying to explain to anybody the difference between voting for somebody you have no clue or somebody that has let you down versus trying something new and believing in yourself and what you strive for and how to get behind the people that are trying to enact change and not sitting back and being complacent. So
exactly.
So for me right now.
My show yesterday, it's an underground, well, they call her underdog. She's running for senator, and she's independent. And so yesterday, I invited her on my show. I mean, I messed them up because the girl who is the incumbent, she's a senator. I brought the independent on my show to announce to my 56,000 voters that I was supporting her. I also told them, yes, I'm a Democrat, but I have my own independent mind, and no political party would think for me. I think for myself because I'm free. And, boy, when I did that, that phone started ringing, and so I'm bringing her back tomorrow. I'm bringing her back tomorrow. See, what I want them to do, because most of the time the Democratic Party will send you some type of censor or resolution if you support Republican or whatever. I'm waiting on it because that's going to be one of the exhibits to go with my lawsuit that I'm going to file against them this month. Did they think they were getting by? See, because the Democratic Party have a history here of censoring the black people. They made a black guy, DeBerry. They make him step down. They made him step down 2 weeks before his election. They made about 20 black people. They censored them or whatever. But we got this white mayor. He supports Republican all the time. They never have made him step down. So I'm going to use that against them. See, that's part of being strategic in how you maneuver. I'll be the first Democratic person to file a lawsuit against them jokers. And like I told them yesterday, I'm going to be a Democrat till I say I'm no longer a Democrat. Try to put me out that party and see what I do. They know what I'm talking about because I got something coming to them. I have something coming to them. I'm going to sue them. I'll meet them in the crossroads because I just told you as running for the governor, first African-American woman to run for governor, they denied me the right. And I even told them, okay, if I can't come to that debate, then put me in through, what you call that thing, televise me in.
Right.
The guy told me absolutely not. But they televised everybody else in. So you have to be careful who you play with. So I know the game. But they're getting ready to get a lawsuit. They should know what I'm talking about because I'd have forewarned them a while. It's going next week. It's coming to them. Okay? That's how I play ball.
You got them on the run, and that's the stuff they don't like. They say, hey, there's a black woman here that's with a brain, and she can strategize because you know we ain't supposed to be able to do that.
Exactly. But now I left this out. The white guy that they brought to Memphis to run against me, he's a Republican. And they left him on a Democratic ticket. Well, see, Democrats, I tell them all the time, they're a little slow. They slow. They can't outthink Republicans now. They slow. Because Republicans are infiltrating the Democratic Party.
Okay?
They small. When you look at the Democrat, they are very shrewd in how they playing this game. So what they did, this boy, I call him a Democrat Republican. He played a Democrat because when they pulled the record, he never voted as a Democrat. He voted for Trump, and he voted for the last Republican. But they still let him remain on the Democratic ballot. And I went up there to talk to the Tennessee Democratic Party. The white folks told them, we're going to let him stay on the ballot. Well, that's when you made your mistake right there. Your bylaws state that you cannot let a Republican stay on a Democrat. That's why you call it Democratic
Party and a Republican Party. Who heard of such?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I bet your Republican Party not going to let a Democrat stay on there. One thing about the Republicans, they're not going to let a Democrat stay in their party. And even if you're a Republican, they putting some Republican out of their party. That's how
That's
screwed
right.
they are.
That's
okay?
right.
You have to study them. But the Democrat, they accepting everything to build their party. What in the world wrong with them? And that's how they, the day I went up there to complain, they changed their bylaws saying that to build our party, we are going to let Republicans or anybody else want to come into the party. What kind of foolish, I'm taking that right up in the court of law with me.
Well, you let me know when you go up in that court of law, I'm going to.
Yes, because, see, we got to, but see, we'll talk off, see, I'm kind of underground, we don't want to talk on this phone, but what we'll do, I want to help you with your campaign. Sister Empress, give her my number, and
I'm going to
support you in your campaign, because, see, I got 2 years to strategize and play with these people.
I appreciate
president.
That.
But yeah, we'll make this thing happen.
Let me know, or I can come your way, and we could start strategizing ahead of time. Because, see, we got to get ready. Got to get ready.
Exactly.
We want you in office. We want you in office, and no, we don't want
to
you in office.
Yep.
Hey,
here
they thought Obama was doing something. It really would be Chocolate City, because we'll do an insurrection for sure. It'll be the real insurrection. I don't know where you all going, but you got to get the hell out of here. You got to go. And so that's why they didn't. If you research me, you'll see I'm not too nice. And so they plotted, even the media didn't even give me no, they plotted against me. But I had already, I already knew it was going to happen. Because one thing they resent is a strong, they don't resent a black woman. They resent a strong black woman. And that's why, Empress, Sister Empress, you having so much problems in your neighborhood. I don't know how we're going to pull them house Negroes alone. I don't know. I don't know how we're going to do it. Because, sadly, they'll plot up against us, and that's how Dr. Martin Luther King got killed in Memphis. Because he let his guard down with people that look like him around him. Y'all ever seen the historical photo when Dr. Martin Luther King was shot? Five of the people standing around him, they was pointing where the shot came from. Who did
yeah.
that? Most of the time when somebody shoot a gun, you strapping around like cockroaches. You hitting the ground, you running. Who does that just stand there? And then they found out later that Mr. Withers, who was taking the picture, was part of the FBI. He was
yes.
FBI informant.
Yep.
And
that's
somebody
right.
called me the other day, talking about, are you going to go to Mr. Withers, his 100th anniversary? I told him, heck no. I don't celebrate no FBI informant.
Mm-hmm.
So no. But we still have that today. Even when we run our campaign, they send people that look like us as
yeah.
moles in our campaign. And that's why I didn't have a lot of people around me when I was running for governor. That's why I'm talking today.
Mm-hmm.
And something else black people mm-hmm. won't do. They won't donate you a lot of money for your campaign.
Right.
See, that yeah. it goes back to that self-hatred. Now, I don't know, sister,
yep.
how you have done, but for my campaign, I only raised $4,000. But I wasn't going to put
wow.
a lot in my campaign. I didn't raise a lot of money. I only raised $4,000, but I received 56,000 votes. Hello, somebody.
So,
yeah.
Me, I won't take any. I got personal donations, but I won't take any money. I run with my own funds. That way,
same
I cannot
here.
Be bought.
Thank you.
I refuse. If somebody runs to me, I will not. I just tell them, no, thank you.
Exactly. Because I turned down $250,000 this past. You would be the first African-American to run. We'll put $250,000 behind you so you'll have all your sign and your marketing and this and that.
Right.
Let me think about it. No, thank you.
And so I put that out there. I would not accept any PAC money. And so that's how I govern myself. Period. I put that day one. I said that.
Yeah, all of a sudden you start getting emails and phone calls. You know, we want to talk and do this and do that. The answer is no.
Exactly. We have so much in common. Exactly.
Compromise in order to have this talk with you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
So how many black people are running against you in this race?
I believe they're all black. As far as I know,
really?
They're all black. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
And so how many is that?
I believe there's six of us. There's six of us, including the incumbent.
Okay.
Yeah. So
the incumbent is black. Is he Republican, Democrat?
Democrat, and he needs to go. Oh, well, I think he's a white guy. He may be Indian, but there is a non-black one that's running. That's a Republican. The rest of us are black.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said yes in my show.
Never seen that many running for this seat.
Wow.
So we are really him being in that seat. He's got to go.
I don't know where he's going, but he has to get out of there.
Yeah, he's got to go. Taking up space, taking up air, and taking up almost $400,000. He's only in there to get his pension. And that is a terrible thing to somebody. I don't see any other reason why he's still in that seat. Let it go.
Let it go.
All right, y'all. Well, listen, we're going to get ready to close this dialogue out. It has been quite interesting, I think, definitely inspirational and motivational and then some. So we're going to keep it moving. We're going to keep growing and developing. See, that's why I said Million Woman Party, so that we can bring our sisters together and our brothers too, but, you know, we focus on our sisters. And begin to, as your sister just said, strategize, support one another. That's what it's about. That's what our party is about. Self-reliance, self-determination, and self-defense. That's what the Million Woman Party is about. Education, boots on the ground, working collectively, getting the job done.
Exactly.
This was a, here it is. There it is. And again, we have no, at least from MWM perspective, we have no allegiance to no party. None of them. That's not our mode of operandum. Nope. That's not it. Okay. So, all right, family, listen. We are going to close the session out. We're going to go to Sister Cynthia. We will go to you for your closing comments and then have Dr. Atwater to close us out.
Okay, listen, first, thank you both for being here with me this evening, and thank you to all of the listening members out there. Dr. S. Atwater, you are an inspiration, and Empress, you know that you have always been so for me. I applaud you for all the work that you both do and have been doing, and I look forward to working with you as you move forward. I want to make everybody know that it's not a matter of you choosing which side that you want to be on, Democrat, Republican, Independent, Libertarian, whatever they call themselves. It's a matter of you being an informed voter. It's a matter of you being involved in what happens to you as opposed to allowing things to continue to happen to you. All right? We as a whole are collectively responsible for our lives. We as a whole are collectively responsible for what we allow to continue to happen. So I encourage you to step outside of yourself, outside of that box, try to understand that everything that you're going through has been designed to make you fail, designed to make you feel bad about yourself financially, emotionally, to be a bad parent. You know, all of these things have been set in place to disturb your mental well-being and your value system as we know it. I just say to everybody, stay and be encouraged and be on the path to know that things will get better and that there are people out there that's willing to work with you. We cannot do it for you. We can work with you to help enact change. Thank you guys again.
Ashe. Listen, before you close out or before you leave us, do you have a website or how can folks connect with you?
Well, I always give my phone number. That's fine with me, and an email address.
Are you on Facebook? What about Facebook?
Facebook, Cynthia Johnson for Congress.
All right.
And my website is Cynthia A. Johnson for New Jersey Congress. For Congress, New Jersey 10. I'm sorry. Cynthia Johnson for Congress, New Jersey 10. That's my site. And, of course,
great.
I always give a phone number. Empress, you can post
uh-huh.
it in the blog, okay? It's fine.
Okay. Okay, great. Wonderful. But you can also say it if you like for those who, you know, want to hear it.
862-213-4422. Uh-huh. And I'm very
all
approachable.
Right.
When you call, we will have a conversation.
That's what I'm talking about. Me too. That's the way I do it also. All right. Dr. Atwater.
You know, that dear sister, I am so blessed tonight. And, you know, every time, Sister Empress, you invite me to your meeting or your show, I'm always inspired by your guests. And I'm always inspired by you. Because sometimes, you know, it seems like this road is really long when it comes to Black sisterhood.
Yeah. Yes,
and so
yes.
we need that inspiration and that encouragement. And so I am so blessed today just to be in this, on this show with you and Sister Johnson. And I was just thinking the other day, I said, you know, we used to have close sisterhood in our communities. And we
yeah.
have to get back to that. You know,
that's
it's not
right.
about no competition. It's just embracing and loving on us as sisters. And so we need to get back to that. But as she was talking, everything she echoed, I'm going to embrace because I don't really have a closing statement tonight or a closing message because she said everything. But I will say to our sisters and brothers that we need to work harder to stabilize our communities. We know that Black and brown families are being put out expeditiously through gentrification. And so we need to stop playing now. We need to be about the business of taking care of business in our own community because no one else is going to come and save us. We need to be clear about when we go to the poll and vote for people that look like us but do not care about us. We need to sit down and really, really think about what we're doing when we cast our vote. One vote, one voice. That vote is important. That vote is more important than a designer purse or go out and buy designer clothes. That vote is more important than you going and talking about you want to have a job because a job will come and go.
That's right.
People who's in office can curtail, they can derail your job, your livelihood, your home, to how you purchase a home, how you lose a home. We're not taking the political process serious. And so we as a people need to go back, and I'm not going to even bring in political affiliation. We as a people need to do better, not for ourselves, but for the generation that follow us. We are failing our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. We're failing them. So we need to pick up that torch and do something different and not about just talking about it, but being about it. Most people right now, if the government came after us and shut us down, we wouldn't be able to survive for the next 6 months. If Putin let that release that nuclear bomb, where would we be? I got my gas masks. Where would we be? I got my fallout shelter. I got my bunker. We haven't thought about it. North Korea released that bomb, and we're their people. See, when we're playing right now, any minute these people could release that. They've been testing for the last 2 or 3 months. What other warning do you need? Sooner or later, let them put Trump in jail and watch what Putin does. He's just waiting.
That's right.
And he's not scared of Biden. He's just waiting. So we need to take it serious because a lot of us going to die if we don't pay attention. We play too much. We stay too long. With that said, peace and love, my sisters, and thank you for the invite. It just really warmed my heart. I can sleep tonight peacefully, okay? But I look forward to working with you, my sister, and I will be giving you a call, and you'll be surprised how I get on the mainland. You'll be surprised how I fly up there. I just came back from Belize, by the way, Sister Empress.
Oh,
I'm looking for some land over
that.
There.
All right.
Yeah, I'm looking for some land over there. We may have to move on up to high ground, and then I'll be jumping out the airplane. My birthday is October 27th. I'm doing something on my bucket list. I'll be jumping out the airplane, skydiving on the 27th of this month.
Oh, my goodness. Go ahead with your bad self.
Yeah, and I won't tell people the location, but I will hate for somebody to go there and tell them for that parachute not to release. So I won't let nobody know it until I do it.
I know that's right.
Here, don't
right,
say where.
Now. Well, listen, this has been more than great. And like you said, it has inspired all of us. And with that, to now move forward the way we know we must and will. So my sisters, I thank both of you. I'm so looking forward to working further with both of you, building what we need to build and moving toward those victories that is waiting for us. So love you both. Thank you both. And family, listen, we will be doing more special editions as we get up to October 25th. We make the big announcement. Y'all don't know what's getting ready to happen, but when you hear it, you're going to go, oh, snap, we got something for
right
you.
Right now.
MWM25 is coming, and it's a year long, not no one day, year long. But wait till you hear what we got in store. Oh, yeah.
I can't wait.
I'm
all excited.
Right, we're going to be doing the Zoom, so we're calling it, you know, who's standing with us. And we want folks to call into the Zoom on October 25th and say, I'm standing with MWM. So I'll get some information on that very soon. All right, family, listen, we're going to close out. Thank everyone again. And listen, you know, we always have a lot of work ahead of us, but we're up for it. Because like Sister just said, we Harriet's children and some other children too, some other folks' children too. So again, we say promote you to the Shinda. Together, we shall win. And guess what? This is not about deferred dreams, family. No, 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 no. We're going to get this done, some of this, in our time. So my sister, I thank you again. And hey, we're out. Talk to y'all the next time. Peace.
Thank you. Peace and blessings. Black power.
Yes. Absolutely. Ultrally so. Check it out. Here we go. Thank you.
many things that held us down. But now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go. And where we'll end up, I don't know. But we don't let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together. We're polishing up our actions. If you've never been held down before, I know you refuse to be held down anymore. Well, don't you let nothing go.
Ain't no stopping now. We got to do. Ain't no stopping now. We want to do.